Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 59 of Nerd Pride Radio. 59, that's the atomic number for praseodymium. What? I'm sorry, praseodymium what? Yeah, okay, this is what stunned me. It's episode 59, so I'm gonna look up 59. One of the first things it tells me is what element has that atomic number. And it's praseodymium. I've never heard of praseodymium. It's not even on my radar. Nothing clicks. I'm like, I'm no expert. I'm not a chemist, but I know my way around a periodic table. How is it that I'm not even vaguely familiar with this name? I mean, I know there's 100 and some elements, but that's just 100 and some. Certainly, I've heard this at some point in my life. No, I even had to look up how to pronounce this, is how unfamiliar I was. And that disturbs me. So I go look up praseodymium. It turns out it's a lanthanide. It's in the lanthanide series, a rare earth metal. It easily oxidizes in the atmosphere, but it does have industrial uses, mostly in making glass, mostly in its ability to filter out the color yellow. That makes praseodymium valuable, or useful at least. And so I'm looking at the rest of these, and apparently I go over the entire periodic table, and I'm pretty familiar with most everything except the lanthanides and the actinides. How is it that I don't know these? Now the actinides are one thing. They got you know your uranium and your plutonium, and right between them apparently is neptunium, which I knew, but you know, it's not something you never pay attention to. Neptunium, who gives a crap about neptunium? And then the rest of the stuff in the actinide series, you know them just because they have the cool names, the funny, you know, stereotypical element names. So californium, einsteinium, fermium, nobelium, mendelevium. Okay, we get those. But then I go back to the lanthanide series, where praseodymium is, and I'm looking through these names, and there's 15 of these, and only about two-thirds of them are ringing any bells with me at all. Or no, only about a third of them. Two-thirds of them completely lost on. So praseodymium, right, and then its next-door neighbor, neodymium? Never heard of it. Gadolinium, samarium, dysprosium. I got nothing on these. Holmium. This one was my favorite. Holmium. I'm like, oh God, please tell me that's named after Sherlock Holmes. Please tell me holmium is named after Sherlock. And I go look it up. No, it's named after Stockholm, the city in Sweden. So, oh well, not quite as exciting. But, a lesson to me in, even on subjects that I thought I was mostly familiar with, I have these huge swaths of ignorance to wade through. And it humbled me a little bit. But not for long, because you know me. You should ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, a computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. And my co-host this week is His Lordship, the Viscount St. Austell and the Moor, Biggleswade Brixham. Yeah, after I booked him for this episode, it started to occur to me that I think I've done this before. And so, sure enough, I go look up Viscount St. Austell and the Moor, Biggleswade Brixham, and it turns out he was also my co-host in episode 13. So, apparently, he's just that entertaining. Welcome, Your Lordship. This can be a good time. All right. But enough about all that. It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. Something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week. I add it to my master list in my pocket mod, and then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. All right, first thing on my master list. That's right, it's a little feedback. Apparently Daz is back. Welcome back, Daz. Daz sent me a very nice note telling me how much everyone appreciates and loves my podcast, or at least he does. It's very sweet of you. I appreciate that. And he sent me a bunch of Podomatic entries, so I am very happy. Hopefully some of his turn up this week on the Podomatic list. We'll see. Also, as long as I'm here, updates. Just real quick, because I am doing this every week, apparently. I weigh 262 pounds this morning, so after my little setback last week, down another 2 pounds, right back on track. Things are doing good. And more important than that, my current high score in Snake is 700. So I'm covering almost exactly half the field at this point. I am getting there. This is turning out to be really good. My progress is slowing down now. I'm reaching a critical mass, but I'll keep you posted. Anything else in updates? Updates! Oh, yeah, yeah. As long as I'm here, I also just finished season one of the X-Files, and thus I'm going to listen to the last of the season one X-Files files episodes with Kumail. And I gotta tell you, the more I watch X-Files, the more I really love this show. It's well written. It is a smart show with great acting, and of course there's some hokey stuff in it. It's the X-Files. It's got a lot of weird stuff in it, but it is really well done. The characters especially are so likable, and the writing is so believable on it. This relationship that these two have with each other and with some of the other characters, they're becoming more regular characters in the show. I can't tell you how much I really enjoy the X-Files. I'm sorry I never caught this when I was growing up. My goal now is I want to love the X-Files as much as Kumail does, because Kumail Nanjiani in his X-Files Files podcast, he clearly loves the X-Files more than anyone I've ever met in my life. And it just makes him happy. It makes him happy to watch it again for the fourth or fifth time. It makes him happy to bring on guests to talk about the X-Files with them. It makes him happy every week to just share his X-Files experience with us, the listening audience, amongst all of the, I mean, this guy has so many projects on his plate. I don't know how he finds time for this, but he loves the X-Files that much. If I could love it as much as he does, that would be awesome. I guess part of the appeal for me in listening to Kumail, especially, I mean, you listen to the Indoor Kids with Kumail and his wife Emily, it's spectacular. Listen to X-Files Files with Kumail and his guests. And I see in Kumail, if I could flatter myself so much, a little bit of a reflection of what I feel myself when I do this podcast, that there's just a joy in it, just a love of being there and just sharing with people. So I like it. I encourage you guys, if you haven't checked it out yet, go back and do it. Even if you've seen the X-Files before, go join Kumail and listen to his podcast. Follow the episodes as he does them. It's really worth your time. It's so much fun. Anyway, enough of that. First, it's time for a visit to my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I'm here to share it with you. And I know every week I say video games and card games as if I'm going to talk about anything other than Pathfinder. But this week, I'm going to talk about something other than Pathfinder. Not that I'm not having a great time. I am. But let's take a little break, and I got to talk about a video game. Not even a new one. It's a game I've probably even talked about on the podcast before, because I used to play it extensively, Minecraft. And what happened was I had a computer failure, and I backed up, and I restored everything. And my Minecraft world at that time was really extensive. I'm the kind of guy, I play Minecraft for the Lego building aspect of it. I don't play in whatever the free mode is called. I mean, I don't just go out there and just make stuff. I actually have to work for it. I have to go dig and mine, and I have to cook, and I have to go through all the processes of making all my materials to build the things I want to build. But I do turn off the creepers. I don't have any monsters in my game, so I don't have to worry about building weapons. Because at some point I had to, there was something that I might have had to go kill. And my son is explaining this to me, and I said, well, God, I guess I'm going to have to go make a sword then. He's like, well, how can you possibly be 30th level and you've never made a sword? What is wrong with you? Well, that's just not the way I play. I'm not into the killing part of it. I'm not into the adventuring part of it. I'm into making stuff. And I love it. And so what happened was I restored from backup that last time, and when it came back, my castle was gone. My castle was gone. My volcano was gone. I had built... my moon was gone. I built this huge castle with all these towers and different, and it was wonderful and I really enjoyed it. And just to add to the setting of it, I built an amphitheater out back, a big old gladiator arena, and had that out back with the big sand for the bottom of it and the bleachers coming up on all sides and the big entrances for the warriors on either end. It was gorgeous. And then I even built a moon floating in the sky up above it, which now I don't even need because the new version of Minecraft has a sun and a moon in it. But I built my own moon to float in the sky and look pretty from a distance. And I built a volcano from scratch. It was awesome. It was really good stuff. I really liked my world, and then, like I say, restored from backup, and a bunch of the more recent stuff was just gone. And I was so demoralized, I had to put it away. That was the end of my Minecrafting for years. And now, about a month ago, my third son, Eli, came to me and said he really, really, really liked to have Minecraft back on this new computer. He says he misses his Minecraft. Can we please load up some? All right, fine. So we'd never paid for Minecraft before because I think one of my sons just got a copy of it from somewhere, and so he loaded it on the machine, and we had never actually paid for it. I always felt guilty about that, so we went and bought a copy. And so we installed the latest version of Minecraft on the machine, and he got to play it, and then I got to play it. And I just thought, oh, as a lark, you know, I kind of missed it. Let's just go in and just take a look. And once I got into it, once I had my world set up, God, I went crazy again. I've built myself now a 7-story apartment building, but entirely underground. I took the mountain next to my house, and I've done it in cross section slices. So I've divided up my mountain, so it's all in just little thin floating slices, one above the other. I've done a lot of stuff. And I'm having a great time. So, and I'm just sharing because I just want to tell you guys how much I love my world. It's so much fun. And I would encourage you guys, if you've never played Minecraft, I would encourage you to play it. But most of you have probably already tried it. And you already know what I'm talking about. Now, my latest thing is I just want to find out how to get an endless source of lava in my house. That's all I want. I mean, is that really so much to ask? I think there's a way to do it, but I'm not sure. Because, like, water, if I dig a trench and just fill it with water all the way across, well, if I remove just a bucket of water from the middle, it automatically fills in from the two ends. And so, therefore, I can just keep taking bucket after bucket of water out of that thing. I have endless water now in my house. Nice and easy. So I built a similar trough and filled it with lava, figuring I could do the exact same thing. Just scoop out of the middle. Boom. Lava flows in, fills up the middle section. Boom. Endless lava right in my house. Because that would be really handy for me to make an obsidian production station there in my house. And also you can use lava as fuel for your furnaces. And there's all sorts of good uses for this. And sadly, it didn't work. Apparently lava flows at a more steep rate than that. And so it doesn't fill in. I don't know what the science is behind it. I don't know what they programmed. But anyway, it's annoying me because I can't get endless lava in my home yet. But I think my son tells me that when lava is flowing down a slope, that eventually... coming down the slope, if the angles are right, eventually it will find a spot where it will recede and form a new block of lava. And I think if I do that, I can create a lava waterfall in my house and have a spot towards the bottom of it where it recedes and forms new lava blocks when it flows to the bottom. And I can just take my lava from there. I'm thinking that might work. I'm going to try it. We'll see. For those of you who have never played Minecraft, this just clearly I'm just talking Pokemon at this point. But trust me, these are important issues. And that's really, that's been most of my gaming this week. We've been role-playing online with our Pathfinder stuff that, you know, we're in between sessions. This is our off week. So we're in between sessions. So we've been doing the role-playing on the boards. It goes a little bit slower, but it's interesting. We're just waiting for Eliahead to get in there and do his big story. Go, Eliahead. Get it done. Get it done. We want to see your whole story. We need to share so that we can have some real discussion on this. Let's see. Is that it for gaming? I think that's it for gaming. Heck with this. I know what we should do now.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right. It's the Science Corner. And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. And you'll be learning something awesome here. I'm going to warn you, this Science Corner has some Guardians of the Galaxy spoilers at the end. I'll warn you before I actually talk about them. And I don't think it'll actually ruin the movie for anybody, but it is spoilery, so I'll warn you. You know what? I shouldn't even have said that. But I'll tell you right now that just listening to this Science Corner at all may be a little spoilery for Guardians of the Galaxy. So, if that's really important to you and you haven't seen the movie yet because you're a fool, then you know what? Skip to the next segment. I'm doing what's after this. Oh, it's a new segment after this. So just skip ahead to the next segment then. But for the rest of you who have seen it or don't care about spoilers, hey, what happens to you in a vacuum? Let's say you're on a space station. And let's say you just woke up and you're wandering around the space station in your pajamas. All right, so you got t-shirt, sleep pants on. Nothing big, nothing heavy duty, nothing's going to protect you from anything. And while you're in your pajamas and you're heading on down to the space station galley or whatever it is to go get yourself your Frosted Flakes, one of the airlocks blows, you have a hull breach, something, and you get sucked out into space. What happens to you? Are you going to die? And if so, how fast? If someone's going to come out and rescue you, how long do they have? All right, this is all important. Because eventually you're going to live on a space station and you'll want to know these things. Hold on a second. I have to cough and I didn't have my cough button ready. Hold on. Sorry about that. That was a bad one. All right. So here's what's going to happen. You're in your pajamas. You get sucked out into the vacuums of space, the freezing cold of space. And as it turns out, you're going to immediately lose all the air in your lungs. That's just obvious. The pressure's gone, and boom, all the air gets sucked out of your lungs. And in fact, that's what you want to happen, because if you try and hold your breath, if you actually manage to hold your breath, what would instead happen is then your lungs, the gas in your lungs would expand and probably burst all of the little what are they called? Alveoli? The air sacs inside your lung. Anyway, you'd damage yourself really badly if you managed to keep all that air in. So best that the air goes. Now, you've got no air. That means you've got about 15 useful seconds of consciousness left. And of that 15, you're probably not going to be able to get much done because you're panicking and you can't think fast enough to react. But you've got about 15 seconds of consciousness. Now, during that 15 seconds, you're also going to crap yourself. You're going to completely release your bladder. And you're probably going to vomit a lot, everything in your stomach. So fortunately, you just got up. You hadn't gotten those Frosted Flakes yet because that would make this even more unpleasant. Hopefully, not much is there. But anyway, you're going to do all of those things. And then, if your eyes are open, and maybe even if they're shut too, I don't know for sure. If your eyes are open, your eyes are going to go immediately bloodshot. I mean, all the capillaries in the front part of your eye are just going to burst, and your eyes are going to go totally bloodshot, bright red. And your ears are going to pop, and probably your eardrums are going to burst. All right? That just happens. And then, if someone can get to you within about 2 minutes and get you back inside the space station and get you repressurized and sealed up all within 2 minutes, you're probably going to be fine. Like literally, you're going to be fine. Like, the bloodshot eyes, the burst eardrums, all that is not permanent damage. That's all stuff that can eventually heal, or you'll be functional. You'll be fine. Now, while you were outside, your hands and your feet especially, but most of your body puffed up a lot. All right, you did a lot of swelling, and your fingers and toes especially are going to be really, really painful for that 15 seconds of consciousness you had left. But despite the big puffy body and the swollen, really painful, stiff fingers, again, once you get back inside and you're repressurized, you're going to be fine. That amazes the crap out of me. How is that even... Yeah, and how do we know? All right, that's the best question. I got this from the Today I Found Out podcast. Not podcast. This was a video that Today I Found Out put on, and they had on their website. I love Today I Found Out. TodayIFoundOut.com. Check them out. Fascinating stuff. They are actually pretty accurate, and therefore a lot of fun to read. And anyway, what they pointed out in their little video is that, well, we know all of this because, well, we tested it out on dogs. Back when the space program was first getting started off, we were looking at the possibility of going out into space or getting up into the upper atmosphere, or, you know, when we had our test pilots flying super high. What happens if you lose complete pressure? What happens if you're, if all the pressure goes and you're in the vacuum of space? And so they tested it out on dogs. They put dogs into a vacuum chamber. And what they discovered with dogs is that, yeah, you put dogs in an absolute vacuum, they lose all their air and have about 15 seconds of consciousness. And then they lose control of their bowels and bladder and vomit up everything they got in their stomachs. And then their bodies puff up like little stuffed sausages. And if you take those dogs back out and repressurize them within 90 seconds for dogs, they were fine. Dogs at 90 seconds were fine. They lived, they healed, everything was good. No permanent lasting adverse effects that we could detect. If you left a dog in there for more than 2 minutes, it would die of a heart attack. That's it. So somewhere between 90 seconds and 2 minutes is the limit for dogs. So having tested enough cute puppies, NASA said, well, what if we did chimps? Because, you know, we want something closer to people. Chimps hit about the 3 minute mark. But the exact same response as dogs, just in chimp form, and chimps could last a little bit longer. So we figure people right about 2 minutes. But, hold on. Oh, shit. There's something really, really horrible in the sound here. Okay, it seems to be gone now. I don't know what that was. That was weird. Suddenly anyway, the recording bar suddenly got all this spiky static stuff. So I'm guessing the last 5 minutes I probably have some static coming in that. I'll see if I can clean it up later. Anyway, but Mike, you ask, what about the freezing cold of space? All right, so you've proven that I'm not going to just explode when I take my helmet off. I'm not... My blood isn't going to instantly boil and kill me in a vacuum. But, you know, a vacuum chamber on Earth is very different from the freezing cold, you know, 3 degrees Kelvin vacuum of space. What about the cold? Aren't I going to freeze to death? I mean, when I'm here on Earth and I experience negative 40 degrees, Fahrenheit or Celsius, they're identical. When I experience negative 40 here and I have, any exposed skin stings and hurts instantly. Frostbite sets in minutes if you leave yourself exposed. It's horrifying. And space is way, way colder than that. So aren't I going to freeze to death instantly in the cold of space? Haha! No! That's the best part. Okay, here's the deal. Different materials conduct heat at different rates. So if you dunk yourself in, let's say, ice water. You set your body into freezing cold ice water, you're going to go hypothermic really fast because the water is really dense and the water wicks heat away from your body unbelievably rapidly. All right, you're going to get frozen pretty quick in ice water. But you go out in identical 32 degree air, Fahrenheit I'm talking here. So the exact same temperature as your ice water, you go outside in 32 degree air, that's not bad. I mean, it's not pleasant, but I can walk around in that for quite a while. My fingers are going to start to get cold. My fingers will get numb eventually, but I can handle it outside in the air. Why? Because the air is less dense. This is where the science comes in. It's all been science, but this is really sciencey. And so because the air is less dense, it has less capacity to absorb heat. There's less of it there. It can take off less heat from your body. Therefore, you don't get cold as fast. You'll still get down to zero eventually. Well, 32. You'll still get down to freezing eventually. It just takes a lot longer in air as opposed to water. Okay. So now we go out to space. Space is even less dense. In fact, no density whatsoever. There's no, for the most part, there's no matter there bumping up against your body to conduct heat away from you. All right. Heat transfers best through conduction, through actual contact, physical contact with you. And if there's nothing out there to bump into you and make that physical contact and conduct the heat, then you don't lose heat very fast. In fact, when you're out in space, you're only losing heat through radiation. Like, literally, you're radiating the heat away from your body. There's nothing there that's sucking it away from you. It's just as fast as your body can put off heat. That's all. right? Which means, again, eventually you'll freeze solid in space. That's absolutely true. But it's going to take a long time. You've got more than enough time to handle stuff out there, and you'll wind up dying of oxygen deprivation. That heart attack that comes at the 3-minute mark, yeah, that's going to happen way before you start to lose enough body heat to even notice. You'll be fine. All right. And in fact, there have been people who, well, and I wish I had written stuff down so I could give you the actual names and details, but a dude who goes up in, this is all from today, I found out. Dude goes up in one of those balloon things where he was going to parachute down to Earth, just like what's-his-name a few years ago. This is one of the early ones. And on his way up, he's gonna be parachuting from as high up as anyone had ever parachuted before. So he's getting close to the edge of the atmosphere. And he realizes on his way up that there's something wrong with his gloves. His gloves are not pressurized. So the rest of his body is fine, but his gloves are not pressurized. Therefore, his hands are acting as if they're in complete vacuum. All right. He's not getting the insulation from it. He's not getting the pressurized protection from it. And he thought, oh, you know what? This is a time when I should probably cancel. I should probably call this off. And then he thought, you know what? When am I ever going to have another chance to do this? Come on. If I cancel now, what are the chances that we're going to get back up here? This was expensive. So he kept his mouth shut and he rode it all the way to the top. Literally hour and 40 something minutes. He has his hands completely unpressurized out there. And he said, oh yeah, his hands got swollen, they got really stiff, they were really painful, but ultimately, after an hour and 40 minutes in a vacuum, he got to the top, did his thing. He said it was really tough, you know, working the equipment he had to work, because his fingers were all stiff and swollen and all that, but he got it done. And he parachutes down to Earth, and once he lands, ultimately, no adverse effects. He was fine. Are you kidding with me? Another dude, on a spacewalk, got a hole in his glove. So, I mean, just a little dime-sized, nickel-sized hole, something like that. It's not a big hole in his glove, because a hole in his glove, which should have depressurized the whole glove, and that whole hand should have been going, but instead, it vacuumed the skin there, the web between his finger and his thumb, plugs the hole. So, instead of sucking all the air out and then leaving him unpressurized, no, he winds up with his skin plugging the hole. So he had a nickel-sized patch of skin exposed to vacuum on a spacewalk for hours, like 10 hours, all right? And he didn't even realize it. He knew that there was something a little bit painful there, but he thought there was just something inside the glove, that there was something scratching him or poking him. And, you know, he rubs it a little bit, but he doesn't worry about it because they've got work to do outside. 10 hours. He had skin exposed to vacuum. And ultimately, when he got back inside, end result, blood blister. That was it. Okay? The heat loss through there was so negligible that the heat from the rest of his body his normal blood flow kept it from freezing. So he just had a cold spot that formed a blood blister. That was it. There was nothing. So really, the cold of the vacuum is not what's going to get you. All right, it's going to be that lack of pressure. And even then, it's not going to make you explode. It's just going to suck all your air out, and it's going to be really painful until you suffocate and die of a heart attack. So where does the Guardians of the Galaxy come in on this? Well, that's because the end of the movie, we have a very dramatic scene that involves somebody out in space. And they get out into space, and literally the body flies out there, and they pass out almost immediately. I mean, the timing was about right. And that's one of the reasons I want to see the movie again, is I actually really want to pay attention to this scene and see how closely that scene matches up to what I just talked about here. All right? Because, in the movie, person winds up out in space, they wind up losing all their air and passing out almost immediately with a look of panic on them. Now, there was no bloodshot eyes, which there really should have been. But you know, maybe alien physiology, I don't know. But there was no bloodshot eyes. And we didn't see the visible puffiness, but whatever. And yeah, no vomiting and no release of bowels. But I suppose that would have been a little distasteful, right? Yeah, not nearly as dramatic and romantic if they're shitting and vomiting all over themselves. But anyway, the person passes out, and we can see frost forming over their face. Now that part I don't know about, because you're going to lose a lot of moisture. That's one of the other things that happens. I forgot to mention that. Your mouth goes immediately dry. Your lips, tongue, the inside of your mouth, all the moisture disappears, because all of that is getting wicked off into space. The low pressure causes it to essentially boil at body temperature, and the stuff just evaporates off your face. It's not evaporate. Anyway, the technical term doesn't matter. And you'll also wind up whatever sweat, whatever natural moistures and oils you have that your skin produces will also be very quickly, evaporating into space. So you're going to wind up very dry, if you're out there too long. But I don't know if that moisture as it gets pulled away from your body, I don't know that it would form frost on you. That part seems a little suspicious to me, because we already determined that you're not going to freeze to death. Your body is still radiating heat, and I would assume it's radiating enough heat that if you're not freezing to death immediately, you know, your skin temperature is not getting down to 0 Celsius immediately. So therefore, is the frost realistic? I don't know. Probably not. But it was a cool effect. But then someone comes out to save this person, hands over the mask, gets the oxygen, repressurizes the lungs, and so our person who, and I think it was within a couple of minutes, is now fine, and the person who handed over their mask, oh, well, now he immediately passes out and hangs there. And you know, he's willing to sacrifice his life for someone else. And fortunately, someone comes along within a couple of minutes, scoops them both up, and by the next scene, they're both fine. Which, okay, you know what? Sure, the cosmetic details are a little off, but the basics of that is pretty plausible. And, more than that, it was, while we're in the theater, I'm watching that going, really? Really? This is what we're gonna pass off? Is that, oh, we can survive in space? Is that, and even my wife had to pipe up at that moment and go, oh, come on. But, as it turns out, and this is why I even looked into it in the first place, is I'm like, alright, what would happen in that case? What should the movie have done to make this more realistic? And as it turns out, that's not bad. I'm gonna have to pay more attention, but I mean, I wish they'd gone with if they'd gone with the bloodshot eyes, then you have your, you know, some of your lead actors going the whole rest of the movie with bloodshot eyes before they can heal up. And that would be kind of gruesome. That would be really horrible to look at. But, you know, seriously, that's what would happen. So anyway, I was just fascinated. This whole thing, I got lost in, like I say, it started with the Today I Found Out podcast. That was the first one that I found when I searched for, you know, what happens when you get sucked into a vacuum. That was the first one I found. But my question and the comments below it were all, well, yeah, but what about the freezing temperatures? You're still going to freeze to death out there. So I found some others, and there's lots of people that are doing this. There was one, it's a guy on YouTube who calls himself Bad Astronomer, BA. And so it's his video series, and this is from a few years ago, but his video series was Q&BA. And I don't know if he still does them or not, but I found his, and his was the best of the ones I found for addressing the whole temperature issue. Will you freeze in space? So all credit to those two. Those are my two main sources. There were some others, but they are not really important. Probably everything I got that I presented to you, you probably could find from those two. Fascinating stuff. Anyway, coming up next, now that the spoiler section is over, this is my brand new section. You're going to love this.
When the Lord made me, he made a rambling man.
Rambling man. This is my attempt to capture the train of my thoughts as it jumps the bridge over the stream of my consciousness, which is really just a too clever way of saying sometimes I get a series of interconnected thoughts that just fascinate me, watching how my mind jumps from one to the next and this progression of, it's like the Wikipedia rabbit hole, but without the Wikipedia. It's just my head. And so I had one of those moments this week, and it's all Star Wars related. And so I tried really hard after I was, and it's, oh, this is the problem. It's almost always while I'm driving somewhere. And so I have this long train of thoughts while I'm driving, and I can't write anything down. And I get somewhere, and now, okay, let's see if I can reconstruct. I remember the high points. Can I remember how I got from one to the next? And so that's what I'm going to try and do here, is I'm going to try and reconstruct everything that I was thinking about that day, because it just fascinated me. I don't know if this is going to work or not, but if it does, this is really the kind of stuff that my mind does all the time. So it started off with an F. Mary kill, all right? As I sorted out a couple weeks ago, sorted out all the Podomatics, weeding out duplicates and stuff, I ran across one, and I can't even remember who it was from. I think it was from Direcat, but I wouldn't swear to that. And it was an F. Mary kill that he sent in, or she, I don't remember who it was. And the three choices, and F, marry, kill, you guys know the rules. I'm giving three choices, and I have to choose one for the F, one for a passionate night of lovemaking, and then one to marry and stay with for the rest of my life with no possibility of divorce, and then one that I simply kill. All right. And this F, marry, kill was Jabba the Hutt, Darth Vader, and Emperor Palpatine. And just to answer the question, because I took it out of the Potomac list after I made this whole new segment here. But to answer the question, let's see. Jabba the Hutt, Darth Vader, and Emperor Palpatine. All right. Clearly, you have to kill Emperor Palpatine, because he, more than any other character in the Star Wars saga, is pure evil, pure unredeemable. He is Satan. All right, you have to kill Emperor Palpatine. There's no attraction for a knight of passion with that wizened, shriveled up old man. And certainly you don't want to be married to pure evil. That's not, so he's gotta go. Gotta go. So that leaves me with Jabba and Darth Vader. And in my mind, honestly, you know, creepy as it sounds, I gotta go Darth Vader for the knight of passion. Cause I mean, if I have to choose between the two, I mean, seriously, what do you wanna, which one of those do you want to roll in bed with? And I think I gotta go with Darth Vader for that. He's passionate, right? He would be good at this, I hope. But then that just leaves me to marry Jabba the Hutt, which is okay because he's fabulously wealthy, presuming this is before Leia kills him, right? So, oh, spoilers. Did you not know that? Okay. So that was my solution to the F, marry, kill. But then, every time I hear Emperor Palpatine anymore, I think of Game Grumps. Now, Game Grumps is a video series on YouTube that my kids watch all the time, and they give me random quotes from it, and I never understand what they're talking about because I'm old. But Game Grumps are some guys who I don't know if they, and I know they talk about video games, and they, I think that this is one of those podcasts where they actually play video games and you can watch their play on the video as they're commenting on it, but I could be wrong. I don't really know what they do. I just know this one segment. It's the only segment of theirs that I've actually paid attention to that I understood and laughed really hard at. And it was all about Emperor Palpatine. They got to talking about the scene in one of the prequels where Anakin has a lightsaber in each hand and he's got them crossed and the sabers are up to Count Dooku's neck, and he's about to behead the man, and he's obviously fighting with himself on whether or not he can do this. You know, does he turn to the dark side or not? And Palpatine is watching the scene, and Palpatine's comment is, "Do it." That's it. Do it. And when one of them on Game Grumps made this quote, "Do it," they all start laughing, and they start making jokes about different things that Emperor Palpatine could say. And I, you know what? Go look up, on YouTube, go look up Game Grumps, Emperor Palpatine, do it. All right. And watch, there's parts 1, 2, and 3, and someone has put them together so you can watch all of them together as a unit. I don't know why anyone would bother to break them up in the first place. Go watch that right now. And then come back. Okay. I'm waiting. I'll get a drink. Hold on. Okay. Are we back yet? All right. Funny, right? For those of you who didn't watch, it winds up with them breaking down into things like, because after do it, then they do things like, okay, but what if it was, hey, Emperor Palpatine, Darth Vader is Luke's father. Knew it. All right. Emperor Palpatine, did you come here in that TIE fighter? Flew it. All right. You get where the jokes are going. Over and over. My favorite one, my kids' favorite one as well, right towards the end. Emperor Palpatine, what do we need to do with all this day-old meat? Stew it. I love that one. And then, we're just rolling listening to this, and so we're trying to explain later to my wife what the whole joke was about. This was on the drive to the Renaissance Festival, in fact. And we're trying to explain to her what the joke was, and finally she gets it, and she's playing along. And now, the whole car, for like the next 30 minutes, all we're doing is all of us, you can just see everyone sitting there thinking quietly, waiting until they can come up with a new one. The best that came out of those was, Emperor Palpatine, my horse can't handle these cobblestone roads. Shoo it. I like that one. And, Emperor Palpatine, who starred in The Ghost Whisperer? Jennifer Love Hewitt. All right, see, that was it. Now, maybe you don't find that funny. I do. This was, it was just us. Like I say, you watch the video and it's clearly they got caught in a moment. It was just one of those lightning in a bottle things, and they just reduced themselves to absolute hysterical giggles going over and over these jokes. And we wound up doing, after seeing the video and then explaining it, and then we wound up doing the exact same things to ourselves. Just trying to come up with new ones. Funny. All right. But as I finished thinking about this, while I'm driving, I started thinking about the Star Wars movies in general, and I realize that I have come to reassess my opinion of the Star Wars movies in general. I'm only counting the six. I'm not counting the Clone Wars animated one, although that is considered a seventh canon film. I get that. And I've decided that the best of the six is the original. It's just Star Wars. I don't even have to call it Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. It's just Star Wars, because that's what it was when it was in the theater. Star Wars was a great film. It is simplistic. It is just a happy, fairy tale kind of prototypical adventure myth, and it's awesome. It's just a well-told story. The special effects were phenomenal, especially for its day, but even today, if you can watch an original cut of that film, Watch how dirty the ships are. Watch how gritty and realistic the sets are. They put some loving detail into that movie, and it paid off. Star Wars is a great film with a great story arc. Really good movie. I love Star Wars. I've always loved Star Wars. Empire Strikes Back, which tops the list of Star Wars films for most people. Most people will tell you that Empire Strikes Back is the best of the Star Wars films. And I've decided that I don't think so. I really don't think so. I don't enjoy watching Empire nearly as much as I enjoy watching the original Star Wars. I just don't. And part of it is, okay, I'll agree. It's a good-looking film. It's well-written. It's well-directed. It's put together well. But let's not forget that it's not a self-contained movie. All right? It is nothing but part one of the two-part sequel to Star Wars. It really is. I mean, it ends on a massive cliffhanger. If you don't watch the third movie, the second movie means almost nothing. All right, you've got to have them together. They are a unit. And as such, yeah, Empire has some advantages in that there's no Ewoks in it, and that it doesn't have to resolve anything. All right, you get to the end of Empire, and there's all these questions that are not resolved satisfactorily, but everyone just ignores that because, well, of course they're not resolved satisfactorily. We're waiting for the next movie. Well, you know what? Then you need to put them together. And the third movie is just, I mean, I enjoyed it. I loved it. I saw it in the theater. I thought it was great. I had a great time watching it, but, you know, I was 15 or 16 at the time. And ultimately, as a unit, they're not that great. The third movie, yeah, the Ewoks were the proto Jar Jar Binks. They were the requisite inclusion of the cutesy kid element, the stuff that clearly just seemed aimed at making merchandise. Not that I didn't think Ewoks were awesome in the day, I really did, but ultimately they should have left them as Wookiees. That was the original script. The original script was that Wookiees were supposed to come from the moon of Endor, and that's where they should have been. And it should have been Wookiees who were being used as slave labor by the Empire to help build the new Death Star. That would have been cool and gritty and scary and deep. And yet, no, they went with cute Ewoks who, and it wouldn't even bother me that, you know, we have these Stone Age technology Ewoks living on Endor, who help us out and all that. That's fine. That's fine. But when Ewok technology destroys the most advanced machines of the Empire? Now, come on. Now you're just pandering to little kids at this point. I mean, it was cool scenes. Great special effects, cool scenes, lots of fun. But ultimately, the story is weak. And so, the whole, and I'm not saying that Empire is a bad film. I'm just saying it's not as great as everyone makes it out to be. I think it is really, really overrated. I think it's hip and cool for people to say that Empire is the best of the films and how awesome it is. And oh, this is why George Lucas shouldn't be directing his own films, blah, blah, blah. Which leads me to my next point. And I'll quickly give you that, yeah, the prequels were still all crap. All of them were crap. That's, didn't like the prequels at all. But I got to thinking about George Lucas then, because George Lucas, again, everyone talks shit about Lucas and how the man, you know, he, yeah, oh, sure, you had great ideas. Yeah, you created this world, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? You need to step back and leave creative control to people who know better than you, George. You need to not direct your own films. George, you keep ruining your films whenever. Okay. Now, first off, I met George Lucas the other night, about a week ago. Not this George Lucas. This is George Lucas with a K in Lucas. He's my archbishop, for the Omaha Diocese. And, apparently, George Lucas, the archbishop, Father Lucas, oh my God, it was weird. He looks like a miniature Patrick Stewart. Remember Patrick Stewart, when he was young and really thin because he was a starving actor and he was on the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation as Jean-Luc Picard, but even though he was a young man, he still looked old because he was balding and all that. That's what George Lucas looks like, except smaller. He's still that skinny, but he's smaller and he's soft-spoken and he has this really mellow voice. He was just a nice guy. Just really, really cool to talk to. So George Lucas, if you meet him in person, awesome, awesome dude. But back to the other George Lucas. I just read a bunch of stuff where George Lucas is talking about how part of the reason he's chosen to retire from Star Wars and hand over creative control is because he is so demoralized by all the trash talk about him from the fans that, you know, honored that so many people love his creation and yet somehow hate him for it. That they hate the direction he's taken things in. They hate his meddling and reworking of the scripts. They hate, and so therefore, he said he's demoralized, he can't take any more of this, and thus, that's one of the big reasons that he's decided to step aside and let other people take over, which speaks to, hey, for all you fans out there, just to know, all your whining and complaining on the internet actually changed something, if that's true. All right? Apparently, complaining to your friends on the internet about famous people makes famous people do what you want. All right? Are you happy now? Does that make you feel better? Because, to my mind, I feel bad for George Lucas. I really do. I mean, as a human being, and I understand, look, some of this is just retrospect. I mean, look, the guy was getting older anyway. He was getting to the point where he was probably looking at retiring anyhow. I doubt that fan reaction was his primary reason for stepping down. And also, look, if he was really that, he could. He was perfectly capable of stepping down and taking Star Wars with him. That he could have just locked down Star Wars, taken it away, and said, you know what then? We're done. There's no more canon Star Wars material ever. I'm finished with it. Look, the contracts I've already signed for books and comics and whatever, okay, you guys can finish those out, but that's it. I'm done. There will never be another Star Wars film. There will never be another Star Wars TV show, because guess what? You guys pissed me off. He could have done that. And even doing that, he could have retired happily on the hundreds of millions of dollars he's made from the Star Wars franchise over the year, and will continue to make from the royalties and the re-releases of the DVDs and the blah, 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 blah. All right, the guy is set for life. He didn't have to hand over Star Wars to other people. But, you know, he'd like to see it continue and have another life, I suppose. He'd like to make another $1 billion. Okay, good for him. But ultimately, I don't know if I'm making any kind of real point here, but ultimately, I felt kind of bad for the guy because, okay, yeah, even though he may be exaggerating a bit that, oh, yeah, well, this is part of the reason I'm stepping down. This is, okay, whatever. But imagine being him, and even with your millions at home to comfort you as you go diving into your swimming pool full of cash like Scrooge McDuck, keep in mind that he's still a human being, and imagine if you have to avoid the internet entirely because every time you go on the internet, all you see is people telling you how you're ruining this thing you've created. That it's his vision. It's his thing that he created. From his point of view, he made Star Wars, and he did. I mean, I'm not saying that's not just from his point of view, but from his point of view, he made Star Wars, and now here's other people telling him how he's ruining his vision. This thing that he created that makes him happy, that he loves so much. Yeah, you know what? That's great, George, but you're doing it wrong. That's gotta suck, dude. Seriously. And again, I'm not defending Lucas. I'm just saying I feel bad for him on that point. That has got to be a hard thing. And again, he's got his millions to comfort him. But, you know, as we saw with Robin Williams, you know, sometimes your huge house and your millions and your, you know, love and appreciation from everyone around you, sometimes that's not enough for some people. So, you know, you gotta, that was really overly dramatic. I'm not saying that, oh, see what you've done? Now George is going to kill himself. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, there's a difference between your material wealth and your perception of yourself as a worthy and valuable human being. All right. That's all I'm saying. So, having done that though, I should back up just a moment just to say, hey, Scrooge McDuck's swimming pool full of cash was actually a major feature in this last week's What If segment of XKCD. So if you're interested in the physics of having a pile of cash big enough to swim in, go check out XKCD. Click on the What If link at the top and go read this week's article. It's fascinating on big piles of money. But anyway, that wasn't really where I was going with this. So I'm thinking about George Lucas, and he's now handed it off to other people, and I'm wondering, okay, the speculation has been rampant for months. What's going to happen with Star Wars? I mean, I'm as excited as the next guy to see some new films, even though I've just told you that really the original was the only really good movie, and Empire's pretty good, and all the rest kind of went downhill after that. Even having said that, I still love the Star Wars universe. I still love the characters and the stories, the history. I mean, that thing is millennia deep. It is rich, and it's a perfect world for exploring. What are they going to do with it now? And the most likely track is that we want a big interconnected universe, and that we don't have to tell this single story in a huge trilogy, that maybe we can break it down to some interconnected stories that eventually all come together, and it very much modeled on the current Marvel movie universe, because Marvel has hit on something. Marvel is the biggest thing going in movies right now. They are guaranteed blockbuster after guaranteed blockbuster, and everybody out there wants to be Marvel now. DC wants desperately to be Marvel and have movies for all of its heroes, but also movies that bring them together, such as Batman versus Superman, where Wonder Woman's going to show up, and I don't know what other characters. Aquaman's going to be in there, and eventually that will lead into Justice League. And they're doing the reverse order of they're going to start, it seems, with establishing the characters in a group setting in Batman versus Superman, and then only go to the individual movies built in that same universe after that's done, the opposite of what Marvel did. Star Wars has the opportunity that, you know, they're talking about doing Star Wars, you know, like there's been talk of a solo Boba Fett movie, a solo Yoda origin movie, and doing just bits and pieces of the interesting history of this galaxy and then bringing them together into the larger overarching tentpole Star Wars movies within that. There's talk about, oh god, the classic monster franchise. Did you hear this? That they want to do a unified universe where they have, you know, a Mummy movie, a Dracula movie, a Frankenstein movie, and then something that kind of ties this whole world together with a, that seems stupid to me, but okay, whatever. As long as Abbott and Costello are in it, I'm on board. And I don't remember who said this, some article I was reading, and the guy hit it dead on. The problem is, everybody sees what Marvel is doing, and the idea that we can have this big unified universe where you can have individual movies and group movies, and you can bring it all together, and everything's tied together in one big world. And everybody wants to copy that. But what they're forgetting is that Marvel's just making good movies. All right. Marvel is just making good movies that tell really good stories. These are great movies with independent creative directors and story writers who know their craft, and Marvel keeps them reined in to the universe itself. I mean, Edgar Wright, for example, great independent filmmaker. He's the guy that works with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. And Edgar Wright is brilliant at what he does. And when he started bringing his vision to Ant-Man, apparently his vision was a little too far off the mark. So even though James Gunn got his way completely with Guardians of the Galaxy, so it seems, and Joss Whedon is just going great guns with the Avengers, Edgar Wright was going to be coming in on Ant-Man, and it turns out, yeah, you know what? It didn't quite line up. We still got to keep it in line with our Marvel Universe. So they let him go. They're bringing in someone else. But these are people who are telling great movies that, oh yeah, also happen to be built within the Marvel framework. Smart. All right. Because it's not, you know, here's DC with Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman and Green Lantern and The Flash, all Aquaman, all their iconics. Iconic because these are all the ones that we grew up with on Super Friends, for goodness sake. All right. Iconic. They're biggest heroes and they're pulling out all the guns. What did Marvel do? Yeah, Marvel, be out of necessity, because Marvel stupidly sold off the rights to the X-Men movies and the Spider-Man movies with Wolverine included in the X-Men. I mean, their biggest properties, their biggest sellers, those are the ones that people were fishing for. Fantastic Four was hugely recognizable. These are the ones that people would be clamoring to go see a movie of, and those are the ones that Marvel foolishly sold off the rights to before they realized that there was a lot of money to be made in this. And so when they built their new franchise and their new expanded universe, who did Marvel build it from? Iron Man? Do you know, no one gave a crap about Iron Man before that movie. All right? Nobody. Iron Man was just a small-time hero. He'd had a long-running comic series. He'd been part of the Avengers. He'd been part of the Marvel universe forever, but he was not really anybody's favorite. And yet, when Iron Man hit the theaters, I was floored. It was the greatest superhero movie ever made. And now, it doesn't even hold a candle to the stuff that Marvel's doing now. I mean, they made Iron Man into every child's favorite hero. I mean, holy crap. And then they did the same thing with Thor. Thor was not their big name. It was not one of their big guns. Guardians of the Galaxy? I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is king of the theaters right now. But honestly, before they made the announcement that they were making a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, who knew anything about Guardians of the Galaxy? I mean, I am a huge nerd, a huge comic book nerd, a huge superhero nerd, and I only vaguely knew who Guardians of the Galaxy were. I mean, I knew who they were, and I could name some of the characters, vaguely. But could I have named Star-Lord and Gamora? Or did I know Groot had a name? I didn't even know Drax existed. I mean, honestly, when you said Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm like, okay, some kind of superhero dude, and I know there's a raccoon in there, and I got nothing. It's connected to Thanos, right? It's out in space. I got nothing. That's it. That's all I had. All right. And yet Guardians of the Galaxy is now part of this expanded universe. It's the biggest thing they got going. Guardians of the Galaxy comics are going to go through the roof at this point. Not that that's chump change compared to the movies, but they're doing it right, all right? It's not that they're picking their big name properties, and it's not because they're doing this unified universe. It's because even with these little properties, these small names that nobody knows about, they have decades worth of unbelievably good stories, and they have people who love those stories and know how to work them and know how to take the best elements and make something good. I am just thrilled by this. And so I don't know that DC's ever going to get it right. They keep trying, but I don't think they're going to do it. I really don't. And so Star Wars, to bring it all back around to where this ramble started, Star Wars, I hope that Star Wars sets about making good movies. Not just telling us a Boba Fett story because everybody wants to see Boba Fett. Boba Fett is, you know, it's hackneyed, but Boba Fett's everyone's favorite bounty hunter. He's, okay, that's great. Or Yoda, for that matter. Everybody loves them some Yoda. Great. But don't tell me this story just because it's Boba Fett and it's set in the Star Wars universe, so it'll tie into other stuff later. Tell me a good Boba Fett story. And there's tons of them out there. There are so many books and comics that involve Boba Fett. Pick a really good story. Pick someone who loves that story. Get some screenwriters that know the material and love it. And they can pick out a really good Boba Fett story and adapt it to the big screen and make a real movie out of it. All right, that would be awesome. Same thing with Yoda. All right, the material is all there. They just need someone who can know what works for the screen and make it real. And I hope that that's what they do, but I don't think so. I think what they're gonna do is look. But it's Disney. I mean, Disney is, but it's Disney giving Marvel the free rein to do it right. So, you know, is Disney going to have that same model when it comes to Star Wars, or is it going to be Disney giving whoever's running the Star Wars movies free rein to win or lose on their own merits? But if they can figure out how to make a good movie out of Boba Fett, then this will work in. But just to make a movie because, well, you know, we need episode 7 now. So which story are we going to tell? I hope they do it right. I really do. Now, I'm not yet done. Oh God. See, I'm at an hour now and I haven't even started the Podomatic. So after that, I realize this is the point in my stream of consciousness while I'm driving. This was the point where I realize that I have just gone down this incredible rabbit hole of Star Wars connected thoughts. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, down the rabbit hole. I'm like, okay, but first off, I've already used down the rabbit hole for a different segment for whenever I'm talking about Wikipedia. But hey, what about a Wookiepedia rabbit hole? And I'm thinking, okay, instead of a rabbit, oh, I know. What was that? What was the name of that creature that almost ate the Millennium Falcon? The thing that came out of the asteroid and the Falcon flies in and, oh my God, this isn't a cave. And then they have to fly away. I'm like, what was the name of that thing? Because that, if I can get that, that would be a great name for this segment, which I ultimately didn't use. But it turns out I go on to Wikipedia, which is a real thing, and if you haven't ever been on Wikipedia, it's just as easy to get lost there as it is on the real Wikipedia, because again, Star Wars is huge and fascinating, and I went down and I found a whole list of different beasts and creatures from different Star Wars properties, and they were fascinating. And then all the different races and all the different, and I barely even touched any of the history stuff, but I did find that creature that swallowed the Millennium Falcon was a space slug. And I'm like, down the space slug hole, that does not work at all. I can't work with this at all. No, space slug. But when I go look at the space slug entry, yeah, it's just colloquially known as a space slug. Its actual name is an Exegorth. Oh, now Exegorth, that's a name I can work with. That's cool. And apparently Exegorths, normally only like, what, 5 to 10 meters long? But for some reason, this particular asteroid belt that was, someone seeded it with the Exegorths, to use as a defense measure, blah, 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 blah. And in this environment, for some reason, instead of growing to 5 to 10 meters, they grow to 900 meters. So, go figure. So, that was down the Exegorth hole. Now, last bit about it. This was the very final thing that happened. As I was flipping through the various races, species, intelligent beings of the Star Wars universe, which, by the way, you would be amazed at how many of them have... They give you this whole long description of this species. It gives you their physical description, bits about their culture, their history, how they relate to the other ones, what their primary functions are, blah, 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 blah. They'll give you the paragraph's worth of material. And then at the very end of the paragraph, the only member of this species to ever appear in any Star Wars property was this dude. I'm like, you're kidding with me. One character shows up with, you know, weird sets of horns and forearms and scales, and just looked really cool for this and had the abilities they needed for that particular role. And based on that one character, we've developed pages of background and history and material. That's why Star Wars is so rich. Man, these people are devoted. As I'm flipping through, when I got to the Twi'leks, and the Twi'leks are the ones that they're very humanoid in appearance, but they usually have like blue or green or white skin, whatever. Anyway, but they have the brain tails, the two big brain tails, the floppy things that come up off the top of their head and then hang down their back. And we saw one of them, male that had, he was hideous with pointed teeth and he was working as an advisor or an accountant or something, who knows what. But also the, sexy dancing slave girls were also Twi'leks with the big brain tails. And then in some stories there have been Twi'lek Jedi and there's been, but anyway, what it reminded me of was the fact that when I actually played in a Star Wars game, and I only played a little bit. I think we only got to our first battle and then I wound up backing up because we were playing by bulletin board, and I have a real tough time with a game that's solely by bulletin board. I have a tough time handling combat there. I have a tough time keeping interest when people have to take turns and you have to wait one by one by one for people to come in for their turns. It just seems to take forever, and I always wind up losing interest in those. But I did play a Twi'lek Jedi. Well, not Jedi, a Force Sensitive. She was actually a Scout. The character was a Scout, was the class. And I was just amazed because last week I told you I made a whole list of all my characters that I've ever played in my life, and somehow I completely forgot about her, so I had to go update my list. And that was kind of interesting for me too. But okay, that's enough. That's enough about Star Wars. Oh man. Should I do the badass movie quote of the week? Cause I am so short on time. Alright, you know what? I'm gonna. I actually have a movie quote this week, and you'll guess immediately where it's from if you've seen this movie. But the quote is, "Nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too fast. I would catch it." End quote. Which, of course, is David Bautista as Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. I just love that line. I love that character. I obviously love Guardians of the Galaxy because I can't stop talking about it. But then as I'm looking, because I wanted to look it up and make sure that I had the quote correct, that the wording was correct, because I say that quote all the time. I really do. But I want to make sure I had it right. And while I'm in there, of course, oh, yeah, I forgot the other, I am Groot. That would have been another good quote for this segment. Which, by the way, I am Groot. That line, is this the easiest millions that Vin Diesel has ever made in his life? That he shows up and all he has to do is voice work. He sits in a sound booth and he says, "I am Groot," 20 times, and then that's the end of it, and he gets a paycheck? That's amazing. But it turns out, from what I hear, and this is all secondhand information, but from what I hear, Vin Diesel went into that sound booth, and literally every time you see him say, "I am Groot," in the movie, he apparently in the sound booth did it like 100 or so times for each one of those lines. And, yeah, okay, now do it with this inflection. All right, no, now put the emphasis here. Okay, can you be a little sadder? Can you do it 100 takes for each "I am Groot"? And then that way, afterwards in editing, they could pick out the one that perfectly captured the emotion of that moment, if that's even a thing. And I'm floored by that. That is some dedication. That's cool. Still an easy million, but it's a little bit more than I was thinking went into it. And then the last one that I found while I was looking, as long as I'm in Guardians of the Galaxy quotes, this is probably my favorite from the whole movie, is, "Well, now I'm standing. Happy? We're all standing now. Bunch of jackasses standing in a circle." And that, of course, is Bradley Cooper as Rocket Raccoon. And I loved that moment. That's my favorite quote in the movie. And I love that moment. Okay, great. Now I'm standing. All right. I love that moment because they took a trope and they used the trope. And it was an effectively emotional moment exactly the way that trope is intended to be. And then they subverted it and turned it around. And it was a beautiful little commentary. I thought it was great. Really funny. Really sums up a lot of what that movie is about for me. Great movie. Go see Guardians of the Galaxy. Have I said that before? Holy crow. All right, you know what? That section was way too meticulously plotted. What we need now is a little pod-o-matic! Heck yeah! Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio pod-o-matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out pod-o-matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to haver on about something? You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums. I will add it to the pod-o-matic list. Pod-o-matic is about whatever you want it to be. Just like this week, I got, like I said, Daz sent me a bunch, and DM Dark sent me some. Thank you, you guys. Everyone else, join in. Really, let's get some more going. I really appreciate it. Hopefully, I would love to hear from both of those guys this week, just because, hey, they just added some new ones. They deserve to get a little listen, right? But we'll see what happens. As it turns out, that roll comes up a 55. Let me get my spreadsheet going. And 55 is from Zimny. There's a surprise. How often do you Sudoku? The Japanese number puzzle thing. Never anymore. I used to a lot. I don't know if that's when you wrote this question, but we actually, at work, we had a thing where we had a whiteboard that we didn't use for anything. And so we partitioned it off and we started putting Sudokus up on the wall me and Yancey would. And so whenever we had break or whenever we had lunch and we had a few extra minutes, we would get up there and we'd work them out together. And we would work on the really, really complicated ones. And so having it on a big board, you got lots of room to make extra notes. You got two brains working together. And it was really a lot of fun. And people would stop by because people knew we had the boards. So they'd stop by on their breaks. And, you know, we'd all take 15, 20 minutes together and work a Sudoku if we could. Sometimes they lasted a few days. Sometimes they were really hard. But we loved doing that. I love Sudoku. It was fun. But, eventually the novelty wore off and we stopped doing it. So I haven't done one in a long, long time. Excellent. That is a 50. What the heck is that? That's a 55 again. Go. R2, you're slacking on me, buddy. There we go. 76. That I can work with. All right. There's number one. 76 is from... Oh, it is from Daz. Sweet. All right, Daz. Daz says, is it possible to stick the word ninja in front of every D&D character class and create a whole new class that works? Or do you have to be 13 years old for this to work? good question, Daz. And I'm going to guess that you have to be 13. Although, let's remember, I only play Pathfinder, and ninja is a class. So, could I be a ninja? Probably. Ninja barbarian? That's pretty slick. Ninja bard? Okay, see, now there's the problem. Ninja bard, I mean, you can make it work. I'm sure there's a personality that makes that one work, but you know, ninjas are all about blending in and being quiet and death from the darkness and all that. Whereas bards are really about being flamboyant pirate types dressed up in colorful tights and clothing and not a natural mesh, I would think. But, you know, okay, ninja fighter, ninja cleric, ninja wizard. Yeah, these are all playable, but you know what? Every time I say them, you put ninja in front of anything in D&D, if you put ninja in front of another class, I just think you have a dual-classed character. I don't think it's an actual class. But it could be. I don't know. That's a good one, though. Number 40. 40 is from Zim again. And Zim says, there we go, what is your least favorite thing about humanity? Boy, you are really putting me on the spot. But my least favorite thing about humanity, I don't know, like war and torture and human greed and, and that gal I saw this morning who was in her car, little tiny four-door car, with all the windows rolled up, smoking a cigarette, in fact, chain smoking, with four little kids, like under six, in the back seat. Okay? That's what I hate most about humanity, is that woman. That was terrible. I pull in, and they pull up right next to me, and guy gets out of the passenger seat and goes inside the gas station. I'm going in just to get some pop or something. And this guy gets out, and he's going to go in and get his stuff. And I look over, and here's this girl, 20-something, in this little tiny four-door car with all the windows rolled up, smoking a cigarette. And I'm like, oh, God, that's got to be unpleasant. And then as I stand up and I'm walking by, I realize, oh, my God, and she's got four little kids in the back seat. And, of course, four in a little four-door sedan means no child restraints back there. There's one car seat, and I don't even know if it's strapped in, and then three kids all packed in back there next to the car seat. I'm like, that is horrifying. And I go inside, get my stuff, and I'm on my way back out, and she's still sitting there waiting for her guy. And I thought to myself, all right, maybe she's on her way to work. She has to drop them at the babysitter and then get to work. And she's in a hurry, and this is her only chance to get some nicotine, which doesn't excuse it. But I'm trying to come up with a scenario in my head that would allow her to justify this kind of really, really gross behavior. And it turns out, A, she has started a new cigarette since I've been inside. Because when I first saw her, she had just about finished it. Well, now she has already lit a new one and is working on that one. So she's chain-smoking with these kids in the car. And she's in her pajamas. She's not even going to work. She says, apparently, the guy she's with needed a ride to work, and so she's dropping him off at work, and thank God she didn't just leave the kids at home, which, okay, I guess we should give her credit for that. Maybe. But it's not like, I mean, she's literally dropping the guy off at work and then going back home. She's going to be in the car for 15 minutes total. And because this is not a big town, it's not like you have to drive a half hour to get to work. It literally 15, 20 minutes tops that she had to be in the car. And she couldn't possibly be in the car for that long without having at least two cigarettes. Really? That's what I hate most about humanity. Okay, this is killing me. 55. I swear to you, 55. You're not even trying, R2. Okay, 65. Are we learning? Oh, no, that's 90. 95. 95 is... Dun, 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 dun. Sorry, I have to go all the way to the bottom now. 95 is... From Sirius Paul? I didn't know we had any Sirius Paul ones left. Why was Carlton on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air such a jerk? I suspect I've answered this one before, Eli. But I'll do it anyway. Because Will needed a foil. He needed someone who was a decent enough character to keep around, but a constant foil to Will Smith's character. That's why. Because we needed to have that antagonism, because, you know, the rest of the family is supportive and loving and nice. Uncle, what was the uncle's name? I was going to say, because Uncle whatever was the stern one, and then, but God, now I can't remember his name. Now I've completely thrown off my trail. But yeah, Carlton needed to be the foil. They needed someone to antagonize, someone to get that vicious humor in there. Plus, he was just funny that way. I mean, I guess he was a jerk because he was a spoiled rich kid, ultimately. I mean, if you want in-character motivation, yeah, look, he was spoiled, and maybe because of his height or maybe because of other things, he's insecure about it, and so therefore he needed to keep reminding the world of how special he is, and he would do that by being mean to others, especially to Will, who he looked down on, even though the Fresh Prince was clearly the better person. He was cooler. He was better looking. He was a better rapper. So, yeah, poor Carlton. I feel bad for the dude. 61 is from Ronster. Ronster says, have you ever had a pet bird? Yep, I sure have. I had a Quaker parakeet named Benny, and Benny was with me for maybe a dozen years. And Quaker parakeets are awesome birds. They can actually live to be 30 or 40. But I don't know what happened to Benny. He got sick and died. Quaker parakeets are just, they're parrots. They're little miniature parrots. They're all green. Well, maybe a little gray rough at the neck. They are cute and they talk and they're sturdy and they can handle lots of variation in environment and temperature and this and that. That's why I picked it. They're prolific enough that they're not really expensive. I think I paid, you know, I mean, this was 20 years ago, but I paid $150 for mine. So it's not a really expensive bird as far as parrots go. And they're fairly hardy little things, and they talk. And mine did talk, and he was very cute. He spent a lot of time saying, hi, Benny. But he was adorable, and I loved my bird. 44 on this list says, hey, Ronster again, two in a row, man. Ron says, why do your hands get cold when you are typing a lot? Great question. I don't know. Presumably because, if it is cooler in the room, your fingers, as you're typing, your fingers are separated, so they don't have the insulation of just being next to each other, I'm guessing. Maybe your house is just too cold, Ron. Because you would think the motion would increase blood flow and thus would keep them warmer, but yeah, you should just turn the heat up a degree. That's my guess. Or wear gloves while you type. That works too. 45. No, 54. God! These green dice, see, it's harder to tell them apart now. 54. This is Zimny. Hey, Zim. Zim asks, what would you feed your pet giant ground sloth? Well, that's obvious. Purina Sloth Chow. For extra large sloths. Because you may not know this, But Purina Dog Chow is probably the best-known dog food in the United States. Purina makes lots of dog food, and Purina Dog Food, Dog Chow, is probably the most well-known brand. They also make Purina Cat Chow. And you don't know this, but Science Labs buy Purina Monkey Chow. There is a chow for virtually every animal. So if I have a giant sloth, I guarantee you that Purina has a giant sloth chow. Just guaranteed. 88. 88 comes to us from, oh, it's my brother Kyle. What number am I up to? Is this the seventh one? Kyle says, Slasher versus Supernatural versus Satanic. What flavor of horror do you like best? Well, that's not all my options. I actually like sci-fi horror a lot, too. Something like Pandorum. Oh, was Pandorum not the greatest? I love that movie. If you guys haven't seen Pandorum, go watch it. It looks like it was intended to be a big-budget movie, and it wound up getting released straight to video for I don't know what reason, because it's really good. It's just, you should really, really watch Pandorum. Great movie, and it is, without a doubt, a horror movie and a very frightening one. So sci-fi horror would really be my first choice, but that's not one of the options you gave me. So Slasher versus Supernatural versus Satanic. You know, had you asked me a couple months ago, I would have said Supernatural, but now, I have seen so many of these movies from, oh, now I can't even remember their names. What's the Haunting in Connecticut people? This is another one of those expanded universes where they're all tied together. Hold on just 2 seconds, because I'm going to go look up. Okay, yeah, there it is. The Haunting in Connecticut was one of them. The Conjuring, this is a new expanded universe, sadly. It's from the files of these paranormal hunters, these professional exorcists, whatever they were, people. And these are all supposedly true tales from their actual files that they went out, you know, these are various investigations that they did. And I'm getting tired of them. I'm just getting tired of them. Because first off, I don't like these people at all. They're a bunch of scam artists who tried to pass all this off as real, even though they've been proven to be fake. They've been proven to have completely made all this up, which is okay because, you know, if you're doing a movie, it's okay that you make things up. But the fact that it's based on some real charlatans who pretended that this was all real because that was their livelihood, was fooling people into thinking that this was a true thing. And now, again, they're going expanded universe. Did you see The Conjuring? Do you remember the doll in the case? And the doll was just an object lesson. It was like the cold open of the movie that just gave an example of what their cases are like. And we saw the doll Annabelle. And that was it. It was just a cold open. And then Annabelle, yeah, she had a creepy bit right at the end, but it wasn't the point of the movie. She was just a little sideline, this doll. Well, now Annabelle has her own movie, Annabelle, that's coming out from the same people, the same production company, doing the same crap over and over. And I'm getting tired of Supernatural, I guess. So that leaves me with Satanic, and I can't think of some really good Satanic horror films off the top of my head. Jugface comes close. I did see Jugface, by the way, Kyle. I don't know if I told you that. I saw it, and it was as good as you said. It was really enjoyable. And I don't even know if I would classify that one as a horror movie, or even necessarily satanic, but, God, that was a good film. Just the character study of it was just hypnotic. Really good. I mean, seriously, any of the rest of you who haven't seen Jugface, listen to my brother. Go watch Jugface. It's on Netflix streaming. It's free if you have Netflix. Go watch it. Okay, this is going to be my last one because I also realized that I need to go back and visit the forums, which I haven't done yet. I meant to do that before the Podomatic. But this last one is number 02. And 2 says, super strength or super intelligence. It's from Zimny, by the way. No darks this time. Oh, well. Super strength or super intelligence? I'll go with intelligence. Unless potentially I could go with super strength if that involved, you know, if my super strong body also had increased endurance that meant I was going to live longer. So I, even though I didn't have the super intelligence, I would have the, another 50, 60, 100 years to play with. That would be kind of cool. Because super intelligence also comes with the drawback of, is it possible that my super intelligence is going to alienate me from the people around me? Will it reduce my enjoyment of the nerd things that I love and reduce my enjoyment of the people around me as I become over analytical and can't relate to them anymore and can't enjoy the same simplistic pleasures I did when I was a mere mortal? I don't know. It's a little worrisome, but I would still, given super strength, super intelligence, without analyzing any of the other factors, I'm going to go super intelligence. Gotta be. But before we wrap up, maybe I need a name for this segment. I'll come up with something before next week. But I'm starting now. Every time I record, I'm posting up on the forums that I'm recording now. And it's usually Thursday or Friday. It's been Friday a lot lately. But I'm posting out on the forums that I'm recording. And then before the podcast is over, I'll go in and check. And if anyone's posted anything, hey, we're going to read it right here. Kyle says, I'm renting Captain America Winter Soldier to watch with my family tonight. Out of 10 stars, what will I give it? I'm guessing you'll give it an 8 out of 10 stars. Out of 10 stars, what would you give it? I don't know. I haven't seen it. I really need to see it. I would like to see Captain America Winter Soldier. I've heard amazing things about it. I've heard it was as good as Avengers. It was blah, 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 blah. I'm just excited to see it because it's a Marvel movie. So I'll be getting that soon. And out of 10 stars, how many are caught in a binary system? Oh, that's funny. That's funny on many levels. One, because 10 in binary becomes 2. And that was my first interpretation of this, is that he was saying that this is a binary numbering thing, so that it was only really 2 stars. But then I realized, no, he's talking about actual stars and stars in binary systems. And I think something like 1 out of every 10 star systems is a binary system. I really think that that's true. But I have not... All right, hold on. I know we don't have time for this. But let's go ahead and go to Google and say, what percentage of star systems are binary? There we go. And it says binary star systems. It says 5 to 10% of visible star systems are binary. So 1 in 20, 1 in 10. Hey, I was well within an order of magnitude, if not dead on. I am pretty damn good at my sciencing. All right? You guys should be jealous of me. Aliahead says, clearly 2 base 10. Okay. That's cute. Sorry. See, I should have read further. Should have read further before I answered that on my own, because Eli explained it better than I do. Eliahead adds, do you remember those old Tootsie Pop commercials? The animated ones with the owl? Of course I do. With the owl that would bite the pop after 3 licks, declaring that would be the number of licks it takes to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop? Well, Mike, we know that's clearly false. So how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop? Oh, joke's on you, because I know the answer to this one. Do you know why? Because when I was 12 years old and those commercials were really big on TV, God damn if I didn't lick Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pops and count my licks to see how many licks it took to get to the center. I did this, all right? And it's tough because you actually have to lick it when normally with a lollipop you just stick it in your mouth and you suck on it. No, not me. I licked. And I would lick one side until it got all the way to the center. And I will tell you that the first time I did it, it was about 840. And the second time I did it, it was about 750. So I'm guessing somewhere around 800 on average. It's going to vary based on saliva production, the size of your tongue, the exact balance of your Tootsie Pop, because you've probably noticed that sometimes the Tootsie Roll center is not in the dead center. So there's lots of variants that can factor into it. But I'm going to say 700 to 900 is a reasonable approximation, with 800 being probably close to the average. That's based on a sample size of 2, both from a 12-year-old version of me. So, you know, science isn't perfect on this one, but that's the best you're going to get. I almost brought in R2 on that one. Oh God. And then Kyle replies, Mike actually figured that out as a kid. I hope he tells the story. Well, I did. There you go, guys. That is what everyone commented on the forums while I was recording. You guys are awesome. So the only thing that's left is for GLaDOS to sum up this episode for us.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's In the Garage, She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner, and Ramblin' Man by Hank Williams. Not the Ramblin' Man by the Allman Brothers, although I considered that one, but the Hank Williams one was way cooler. God, that voice. But all of these songs are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them, because I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes, write me a nice review, or check out my Facebook page, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop on my Facebook page, click like. It's 9 seconds out of your busy day. You can do that for a buddy. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. I should, by the way, give credit, because I never mentioned that those games were written by me and by my brother Kyle. Which, you know, his name is on them if you actually pick them up. But we work together on a lot of these. Some of them are just me, some of them are just him. Sandbox Hill especially, it was just him, and it's brilliant. It's literally a miniatures war game using green army men and matchbox cars, which you get to smash with a hammer. This is really cool. But anyway, check them out, all free, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio. I promise I will actually respond to you. Or you can get me on Twitter, @nerdprideradio. But the very best way to talk to me is to come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, send me a message, we will hang out together, we'll be best buds, we'll have fun. I love that one. That's R2 giving me an 82. Did we already do 82? Let's find out. You know what? While I'm looking it up, I'm thinking maybe the forum review where I go in for forum commentary, maybe that should be my little post credits bit, instead of doing R2. Although, you know, I used to actually come up with creative bits to go at the end, and man, that was just way too much work. 82. Ronster says, have you ever had an out of body experience? Maybe. I mean, it was a dreamlike thing, though. It wasn't, I mean, I don't think so. It wasn't like the real out-of-body experience, like, that's always described where you're floating above the room and you're looking down on yourself and all that. I don't think that has ever happened to me, at all. The best I can give is the alien abduction, thing, and I know I've talked about the sleep paralysis, and this is where it's believed that originally stories of witches and demonic possession came from people who had experienced sleep paralysis and couldn't explain it, and so therefore they blamed it on witches or demons or whatever. And nowadays they think a lot of alien abduction stories are based on the experience of sleep paralysis. And essentially, a sleep paralysis is simply that when you sleep, there's a little switch, chemical, I don't know what it is, that shuts off your body so you don't accidentally, you know, walk around and kill yourself while you're sleeping. So essentially it keeps your body, for the most part, paralyzed all night long while you're sleeping. And there is occasionally, for some people, and I think it's a significant number of people, maybe 1/3 of all people experience this at some point, where you will wake up and you know you're awake, but that sleep paralysis signal doesn't shut off. Normally, as soon as you wake up, that turns off, you can move, you're fine. But every once in a while, for some people, you wake up and it doesn't shut off right away. And you have, you know, anywhere from 30 seconds to a few minutes where you're awake and you know you're awake, but you can't open your eyes. You can't move your arms. You can't, and it can induce a feeling of panic. It's very from my own experience, because it's happened to me several times, it's a very claustrophobic feeling. It's an idea of even when I, even now, I've gotten better about it because I know it's going to go away, because it always does. But there's still that thought of, oh God, what if I'm stuck like this? What if I can't get it? And so even though I know it's a temporary thing, and if I wanted to, I could just go back to sleep. I really could. But for me, every time it happens to me now, it is a challenge for me to move something. And I mean, I will, and it's usually my hand, and I will sit there and I can feel myself straining in my dream, straining with all my might to just flip that hand up, just lift my arm and move over, or just to open my eyes all of a sudden. And that breakthrough moment, there's something really satisfying about it. When you're laying there asleep and you're not asleep anymore. You're awake, but your body's paralyzed, and you're like, okay, I'm just gonna open my eyes. And then finally you do it. And there's just, it's a satisfying moment. It's really cool. So no out of body experiences, but something else that I think is cool that I'll just substitute for out of body experience in this analysis. How's that?